Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Small doses,
self-help from the hip.
Small doses,
we're talking that shit.
Small doses,
and keeping it real.
Small doses,
with me and them seals.
It's so funky. Welcome to another edition of Small Doses. I'm just going to let y'all know now, this is a niche episode, okay? This is a niche episode. We're going to be talking about very specific things related to gymnastics. That is a very big part of the conversation. I am very excited to have. I don't get to, it's like when a Star Wars person meets another Star Wars person and you can have like real conversations about Tatooine. That's how I feel about this conversation with our guest today. Amira Rose Davis is a host of the Prodigies podcast, and she is an assistant professor of history at Penn State. Amira, welcome to the show.
Yeah,
welcome
happy to be
show.
Here.
So, okay. The reason I said, you know, we're going to be talking about gymnastics is because, you know, I know last season on your podcast, you had a whole Gabby Douglas moment. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, and just correct me if I'm wrong, next season is going to be dedicated to the whole season is about black.
Yeah.
Just women gymnasts or just black?
Yeah, it's just, I talk about other things, but it really centers on black girls in gymnastics. So
Okay. The
last two seasons of American Prodigies were hosted by other people. And they did one on Freddie Adu, one on Ken Griffey Jr. And okay. So back, I don't know, like a year ago, I was like, bet. So like, obviously I'm going to do one on Gabby. And as it started going and as I started interviewing black gymnasts from the 80s to today, I was like, I can't leave this tape on the cutting room floor because, you know, gymnastics, we'll get into it, but almost everybody who does gymnastics is a prodigy just because of how young the sport skews. So I was like, go back to the cutting room floor, scrap it all. We have to do an entire season on all of these stories in some way. And so the entire season, it just dropped, and we have 8 episodes that will be dropping over the next 2 months. Thank you on American Prodigies, Black Gymnasts, and
Was there anything new that you had not like considered that really like came out during these interviews?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I work on the intersection of race, sports, politics, and gender. And so a lot of the work that I do historically and now is on Black women athletes across mm-hmm. multiple sports. So but I know, you know, how
the norm.
We yeah. know the yeah. things. Let me tell you about gymnastics.
As a sport. Well, you know what?
So I have to tell
before
you.
Before we even go there, because I want folks to be able to hear the comparison, like, what are some of the normal things that you're used to?
So a lot of times we're dealing with, that familiar double bind. So we're talking about body politics, hair politics. We're talking about pay discrepancies, general disrespect. We're talking about a lack of investment. When we're talking about the testimony of people's experiences, mm-hmm. a lot of the times the black women I'm writing about historically, if we know them, we know them only as symbols. They're one-dimensional, they're flattened, they're usually in these uplift narratives. Actually, when I started getting into this research, there was no research. I found them all in children's books, right? So I kind of have this analysis of why are black women athletes so useful to, mm-hmm. you know, our 20-page children books? Because in 20 pages, you can overcome racism and sexism on the strength of, a dream, right? And then the people that you didn't know in black women's sports history, or even now, tend to fall outside of that kind of, constrained box of the stories we allow ourselves to tell about black women in sports. So either they're queer or they're not conventionally attractive or they still have a really thick Southern accent. All of these things that we now kind of talk about as respectability has actually been the box that used to kind of guard participation. And then as that pushed, now what we see is it guards endorsements, right? Who gets the coverage, who gets that. And so across Olympic sports, I work with a lot of Olympians. I cover track and field, I cover the WNBA and activism, all these things. We're familiar with being overlooked. We're familiar with the kind of labor organizing that is integral to being able to just fight for your professional life as an athlete. We're familiar with the way ways that you watch other people that you beat repeatedly get more endorsement dollars than you. We're used to stories like out of the WNBA where the announcers are saying names wrong, or Serena Williams in early March is talking about the New York Times doing a whole profile on her where they're using her sister's pictures. Exactly. I mean, these are some of the most photographed prominent Black women, and they cannot get it right.
I mean, they're literally exactly, on the cover of exactly. Harper's Bazaar.
So, you know, that's what I'm familiar with. And so my premise going into gymnastics and going into the sport is that we have unpacked certain ugly truths about gymnastics, whether it's Little Girls in Pretty Boxes back in the 90s, or, you know, obviously a lot of stuff that has come out in the last few years in the wake of various abuse scandals. There's more than one. But I always was left thinking, what does it feel like to be in that space dealing with those same things, but you're the only Black girl in the gym, right? Because we know all this other stuff is layered onto it. So I went in with the question that guided me as, what does gymnastics look like through the eyes of Black girls? And I was prepared for the like regular heaping of bullshit. I was unprepared for it to be compounded by and intensified by a sport and a culture diffused through the sport that was just so abusive in so many different ways. And trying to parse through how people found and located joy and all of the other things that they were still healing from their experiences. And I think what took me back a most, I talked to athletes from all different eras, and people are talking about hard stories, and we are very gentle, and everything I do is very conversational because we have to trust each other to like lay these truths out there. And I knew going into it, you usually get the tip of the iceberg anyways. But I was unprepared for the sheer amount of people who said, this is the first and last time I'll talk about this. Actually, I'm not ready to talk about this. And it was a whole experience, right? One of my favorite interviews and one of my favorite episodes deals with Black women who were gymnasts in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And one of them in particular was like, I never talk about gymnastics and I'll never talk about it again after this. And I ask everybody to introduce themselves and they're usually like, I was beam champ and this year or I did this, whatever. And she was like, I'm a phlebotomist. And I have not contended with this level of tension in a sport that provided so much and that so many people are still drawn to, but that so many stories overlapped and intersected in ways that were really painful. And even people who now have an okay and healthy relationship with the sport, I found them having whole gaps of their lives where they took time away. And that was brand new for me.
I wonder if because I definitely took time away.
Yeah.
I had a gap. Well, I wasn't an elite gymnast, and I think that's a whole other level. That's a whole other level that people are committing to in their youth and, you know, dealing with just their life being handed over.
I think that's a lot of it. But I will ask you, like, one of the things we track, so the number one thing that people say, this one I want to ask you, I want to see what you say. What is your favorite part about gymnastics when you do it?
I feel like I'm defying gravity.
That's exactly right. Literally, everybody asks, it's in the air. It's the freedom in the air. It's the feeling of flying, right? Yes. There's something so pure about that sort of pursuit of freedom, you know? And then I always talk about, well, what happens when you land? And I think that in that, where people still have located joy is if they have, like, the people who have been able to heal or, like, feel a little bit better about their experiences are in some way or form tapped into a Black community. Whether we're talking about the trailblazers, like Wendy Hilliard, who was like, literally, I always went back to Detroit, right? Like, that's what saved me. Diane Durham had Gary, Indiana, right? Some people, if we're moving more contemporarily speaking, you know, Hallie Mossett from UCLA, you know, she was an AKA. She had all of her sorority right there on campus, you know? And so there is a degree of people who have been isolated within the sport because the sport demanded, as you progressed, a certain type of isolation. And folks who are like, here's how I still felt grounded. And I think that that has been a pattern that we have seen.
I have that pattern.
Yeah. Do you?
Yes, because I was going into level 10 and I got a stress fracture in my wrist. It was my left wrist. So I was able to learn my floor routine on one hand. And I started just doing like standing backs and doing front tumbling on beam.
Right.
But once I healed from that, of course, by nature of putting all this pressure on my right wrist, then I got stress fractures in my right wrist.
Exactly.
So it was just like 6 months of, you know, you're in the gym, but you're not really in the mix.
Exactly.
And then you're also 15, right? So like there's adolescence, you know, there's things going
on. There's a world to see.
There's a world to see. So I was at the same time, I had just gotten to the visual performing arts magnet at my high school, Dr. Phillips High School. Y'all know what it is, 4276 DP. DP. And I now had this like new group of friends that was growing.
Yeah.
And when I was a sophomore and I had these injuries, I also for the first time had like a real group of, like I've always had Black friends, but this was like a whole group.
Right.
Where everybody went to this one person's house after school, you know, the girl's house we used to go to, like her parents owned a church. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like they were in the community in a very, very real way.
Absolutely.
And for what it's worth, like, we were older, so there was also a lot more awareness of, like, the politicization of being Black.
Absolutely.
This is so fresh to my mom, because my mom reminded me of this the other day. And she was like, you remember when? My coach, I was injured, and he didn't let me take the group picture.
Mm.
And I called my mom, and I was like, Jeff is not... Oh, my gosh, I'm gonna get emotional! And my mom was...
This is literally the experience of my show.
And my mom was like, what? I was like, he's not letting me take the picture. Y'all, there's been only a few times in my life where my mother has defied gravity. And like, that was one of those times where I was like, did she put on a jetpack? Like, how did she get here
so
quickly? And she got there, though, and she demanded, like, no, she needs to be in the photo with her cast.
Right.
Like, she got the cast from doing why we were in the photo.
Right.
So long story short, we took the photo. But after that, there was just like a constant. Before that, I hadn't felt like I had been ostracized. I just felt like I was injured.
Right.
But then after that, it started being real like, you're over there.
Yeah.
You're not with us. You're over there. And so at the same time, though, again, I had this group of Black friends now who was like, you're with us.
Exactly.
You're with us.
We got you.
And so one day they came to the gym and I ran through my floor routine. And I admittedly, I hadn't run through my floor routine in like at least a week or two.
Yeah.
And I think back though, and I'm also like, you were 15.
Exactly.
An adult could have said to you, I know that you're tired of not getting to tumble, but you need to run through your floor routine. Like, you know, like it's not, I'm not being defiant, like, to be disrespectful. But long story short, after that, after they came to the gym, he was like, you're not on the team. He was like, you're, he literally said to me, like, you don't belong here. He was right, actually. I didn't. He was right. And I like wrote a letter. And then I became like this mythical creature. Like Amanda was the first person who stood up to Jeff.
Right.
Because I wrote him this whole letter. Like, I don't know who you're dealing with. And my mom delivered the letter. But I know that had I not had
that
space to land on, I think I would have had a similar relationship to gymnastics that a lot of my peers, I'm still friends with a lot of the gymnasts that I was competing with. And you're right. So many of them have this very distant, like bitter, intense. You know, when I hear Dominique Dawes talk about gymnastics, I feel so sad because she brought so much joy and inspiration to so many of us. And her loathsome for the sport is so palpable.
Yeah.
Did you interview her?
We didn't talk to her because
she's like, I don't want to talk about this shit.
Right. And so actually our episode about her is unpacking that a lot of people, like you said, were super inspired by Dominique. And then you ask for a second sentence on her and people get really silent. And so one of the things we tried to do is unpack what her symbol meant and how we can figure out how she wants to orient herself with gymnastics. So she's doing amazing work with her gyms. They're not affiliated with USAG, right? She says a lot without saying directly, oh, this
fuck
is what
y'all.
I think. Exactly. she has her Dominique tact about it. You know what I mean? So that's what we do with her. But we talk to, so the first episode's with Jordan Childs, and that's also a kind of, We work with her story to talk about the themes that we're covering over the course of 8 weeks. And then we move chronologically. So we start with Diane Durham, and we've worked with her family over the last year because, unfortunately, you know, she passed mm-hmm. away last year. So we've been working a lot with her family and her friends and her contemporaries. So Wendy Hilliard, Angie Dinkins, who is literally my favorite person. Mm-hmm. She is the funniest woman. And then Joyce Wilborn. Angie and Joyce were in the junior levels when Diane was competing as a senior, and they were very much inspired by her. And Wendy, of course, was in artistic. Well, when she was in rhythmic, while Diane was in artistic at the same time in the mid 80s. And so that's, we start with that and we move from there. So Betty Aquino, who's my favorite person, she's my birthday twin. Before, I was like, listen, I always try to tell people that conversation is unmatched Gemini energy. And we are talking about some heavy shit, but both of us cannot stop like just being goofy throughout all of it is my favorite. So we talk, you know, to Betty. And then as we get into it, we unpack viral routines from Sophina to Hallie to Nia. So we put like everything together to do a genealogy mm-hmm. of that. And then it moves more modern into Gabby and Simone. But like one of my favorite stuff we do is we talk to little girls, right? We work with brown girls, do gymnastics. We went to Grambling, right? Yep. And we talk to like six-year-old girls coming up right now. And so we try to really have voices from all levels, from multiple eras. And the thing about gymnasts, and this is what really kind of stuck out to me, even when you were kind of sharing your journey in gymnastics, is that so often people have been so conditioned not to talk that people are used to their story. And actually, when we put them all together, there's so much reverberation that it's like, oh, y'all were isolated. And here's actually how, like, why is it that Wendy's story from 86, right, feels like it maps perfectly on to, you know, Sophina's in the 2000s. Like, this is wild to me, right? And this is what we started to see. The other thing we saw about gymnasts is a lot of times, because in order to excel in gymnastics, there's so many things that it taught people. Discipline, definitely
perseverance.
Exactly. All of those things. But it also had a lot of lessons about how you use your voice or don't. And so mm-hmm. a lot of people who are used to talking have been very well media trained. And so a lot of what it also was is exactly how we kind of started, which is like, oh, I have these associations with the sport that I didn't even realize once I sat down in it. And so actually, Kelly, I'm going to talk about you. One of my producers signed on to the show because she's a former gymnast. And she's like, gymnastics, hell yeah, da-da-da. Girl, like, she was like, episode, like, halfway into the project, she was like, therapy. Like, yeah. Here's all the things, right, coming up. And so I think for me, it is actually the collective of voices that is my, which is why I knew we had to do a show about more than just one person. Mm-hmm. Because everybody's inspiring each other. There, it's not romanticized, right? It's not like everybody got along or best friends or anything like that. But rather, there are ways that their lives or their legends intersect with each other's experiences. Even if you're just like, I saw that person at a meet, right? Or if it's Deetra Dennis, we have a great episode with the moms of some gymnasts that we know and love. And I love that episode so much. And Deetra Dennis is, you know, talking to me about seeing E.B. Price's aunt at a meet and being like, what is this world that we that these girls are in, you know? Right. And so that's, for me, the stories that have emerged. Everybody's story is unique and it's all their individual journey, but somehow it also is part of this larger constellation that, unfortunately, especially the stuff about like injury. It's like, I was listening to you talk about those stress fractures, and this is the thing about gymnasts. It's like, I had to stop them and be like, do you know y'all sound wild? Like, I was just talking to somebody the other day and they were like, here are my injuries before college. And it's like, we were on the fifth surgery and I was like, and like,
you stuck with this?
Right. And obviously for y'all, it's like,
par for the course.
Exactly. Like, and so sometimes
outside,
it's just like,
right.
It's like just taking a step back and being like, man, you were 17 with two screws in your hip. Like, let's unpack that. Like, let's actually unpack that.
I was next on bars when I heard Tiffany Bird's hip flexor pop. Mm.
See?
That's just sad.
Exactly. Ah! Exactly. one of the things that we unpack in the 90s are like people who literally were contemporaries of people like Jalisa Gomez. Like, what does it do?
For the people listening, can you tell them about Jalisa Gomez?
Was a gymnast, Mexican-American, and who had gone to the Crowley's gym, left it because she was like, get me the hell out of here. Joined up with another trainer, was circulating the world as a elite gymnast, up-and-coming elite gymnast. And then one meet was pushed to do a vault that she wasn't ready to throw and hit her head on the vault and fell into a coma, had brain trauma. At the medical facility, it was intensified because of malpractice in that space. And she returned to the United States in a vegetative state. And 3 years later, she died. And so here's this death, literally, right, from the sport. Her close friend and training partner, Chrissy Heinrich, also passed away through disordered eating.
Right.
You have two gymnasts who did not make it, right, to 21. Right.
Specifically, directly because of the sport.
Exactly. And there's a way in which we talk about these moments in isolation. And one of the things that is so clear is that if you're training alongside them or right behind them, right, you know of them, this leaves a mark. And so I talk to people like Betty Okina. I talk to people who were just on either side of these kind of tragedies about like how that seeps in your head the next time you're going to throw a vault that you're unsure about, you know? And the knowledge of how do I find my voice to speak up? Because there's too many stories of people who have been injured, right? Because they were pushed to compete when they knew they weren't ready. And I don't know if anybody's had this experience. I find it so deeply frustrating when you know you should have said something.
Oh my gosh.
And then
you didn't. And then shit happens.
And then shit happens.
That guilt will follow you forever.
Exactly. So when we talk about the process of gymnasts finding their voices, it's also a process of coming into themselves, in trusting themselves and healing from the moments in which they doubted themselves to understand, like, that was a systemic thing,
right?
This is not actually on you.
Like, it's not a character trait.
Exactly. Because, again, I just want to remind people about age, because that's what we lose perspective of. We're talking about people who enter sport at 3, at 4, at 5. If you're entering the sport at 8 and 9, you're late to the party. And there's people who have and who are really good, but it's more rare because this is how young it skews. Your gymnastics old by the time you're 20.
I started at 12, and I really do think that the reason I was so vocal had a lot to do with—
because you hadn't been brought up in that.
Right. Because I started at 12 and I was a level 8 in a year.
Yep. And let me tell you, that brings more animosity. So there's a few Black girls who, this is true, they come in late to the sport and then they're kicking ass. And everybody in the gym is like, they just got here though. You know what I mean? And so it compounds that. And this is kind of why I feel like, is obviously this is why folks like us always are saying, you need to have a racial analysis on things. Because anybody is going to be mad if somebody new comes in and all of a sudden they're leveling, da-da-da. But if it's a Black girl taking your spot and getting medals, it's over. Even if it's not your teammate, you know, your training partner saying it, their parents are certainly sitting there in the little observation room with a mouthful of words about it.
Oh, well, da-da-da-da. I remember, you know, I was on the show My Brother and Me on Nickelodeon during this time, and it premiered. And so my teammates were like, oh, you know, we're going to watch the show. And one of my teammates was like, oh, yeah, my dad said I can't watch the show because there's too many Black people on it. Mm. And like, she felt the need to like,
to say
let
that.
Me know that.
Lovely. Exactly.
I was like, well, you'll be missing out.
It's ridiculous. I mean, that's some of the things that is so interesting, because there has been work done, obviously, about age in gymnastics and abuse in gymnastics, eating disorders, et cetera. But what struck me as we dove into it is like how there was no racial lens to it whatsoever. So I'll just give an example. There's a story that's kind of parodied in books. Joan Ryan covers it, et cetera, of a gym. And the point of this story is to illustrate that there is a problem with food restriction, which is a problem. But the example that they give is there is a gym that for Halloween, one of the gymnasts was so small because of food restriction, et cetera, that her Halloween costume was to don blackface and go as like a starving Ethiopian. Now, this story is regurgitated multiple times, right?
I have never heard this story.
Girl.
Wow.
I was reading this, and, like, the thing is, people are writing about it in the late 90s as, like, this is an example of, like, eating disorders.
I was going to say, like, they're not even pointing out that she's not in blackface.
Not at all. And I was like, I'm thinking about the one little black girl who's inevitably in that gym.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is it. Like, she's literally in blackface being like, I'm a starving African. And everybody's like, eating disorders. And it's like, yeah, eating disorders and racism, right? And so I think that's a lot of what we're looking at. So, like, Betty Aquino is really tremendous with a lot of the stories that she is open about. And she talks about food restrictions. She talks about all of that. But she talks about, yeah, she's tall for a gymnast and all that comes with being tall. But she's also brown. And that adds a layer. The famous story about Betty Aquino, of course, is she gets down to the Crowley Ranch in Houston. This is the epicenter of American gymnastics at the time. And her mom's Romanian. She speaks the language.
Oh, that's right.
She is in the gym listening to the Crowleys talk massive shit about everybody. But because she's a Gemini like me, she didn't hold her face. So she gives it away quite early. Like, she turns around and she's like, huh? And then they switch languages. But one of my favorite moments in the show is I asked her, I said, Betty, they knew your mom. Like, why did they think you didn't speak Romanian? She was like, you know why. I was like, I know why. I just need you to say it for the tape. You know what I mean? And so thinking about, like, Betty Aquino's experiences is really instructive because she, in many ways, is coming right at the rise of modern gymnastics. And she's talking mm-hmm. about injury. She's talking about food restriction. But one of the things she talks about is, like, this moment, right, where she's training, going to be a, like, exhibition, and Nadia Comaneci and Bert are, like, here. And so everybody's, like, trying to be their best, right? Impress, like, the big wigs of gymnastics. And she is on that night in training. She has hit everything. She's like, listen, I don't know what everybody else is doing, but I'm good. And Bella knew that. And she was done. And she really should have been able to, like, sit down. And instead, he kept asking her to throw a dismount that she wasn't going to do in that competition the next night. And she knew she was too tired to do it. And at the time, you weren't going into a pit, you weren't going into a padded surface, you were throwing it on hard ground. Mm. And so she was just told to throw it over and over and over. And about the fourth or fifth time, she landed, heard a pop, and her hip was popped out, strained, just a mess. She missed the meet. She was out for 8 weeks. And that's one of those moments where she said, I knew I should have said something. And then what she said to me that has always stuck with me since we had that conversation was, like, it's not just that if I spoke up, I would be a sassy gymnast, but I would be the sassy black girl. And I would mm-hmm. confirm all the stereotypes that mm-hmm. were just barely held at bay because I was an efficient tumbler. Right.
Right. Right.
Because I was good on beam. And that is, to me, one of the kind of essence of a lot of these stories is it is all the things that, like, I see my contemporary gymnast dealing with. And then this other knowledge about what it means to be a black girl in this world, you know, not just the gym, not just the federation, not just the college, but the world. And that is compounded in the sport because the sport is of the world. And so in many ways, it's not surprising, but I think the stories just haven't been told for a number of reasons. And to hear them told in succession and together has been so powerful and at times very hard.
We had Jordan on the show and she was, I must say, like, she was more open than I kind of expected yeah. her to be, but just about, like, her reason for moving gyms.
Yes, coaches. Yeah,
you know, coaches for leaving Seattle. Then we had Marzetta Frazier and Sakai Wright on the show to talk about the fuckery at UCLA.
Yep.
And, you know, give them a platform because, as you know, in the work you've done and that you do, like, whenever the black girls are part of the conversation, it becomes, well, they're the bullies, they started it, you know, all the above. So, oh, the inspector just arrived. So, hey guys, just by the way, if you're hearing, like, in the background, it's because y'all know I've been doing my kitchen renovation and I'm watching the inspector walk up the driveway. It's a brother. It's a brother. So I'm like, hey, man, you know, take your time because I want it done right. But anywho, there was I don't know if you saw that. I'm sure you, of course you did. Mm-hmm. If you love gymnastics, you watch anything they make on gymnastics. Yes. So they had yeah. this dope docuseries on Peacock yeah. that was leading up to the Olympics. And they were following a couple folks. And Connor McClain was one of those
yes.
folks. And Conor McClain, by the way, just won the Winter Cup, which is a very big,
a super melanated podium.
Yes. Like, the girls are here, honey.
Exactly.
The girls
they have arrived and they are not leaving anytime soon.
And, you know, like, you look at her and she just kind of seems like a very, like, docile, you know, just like, sweetie girl. But she left her gym and she had been with her coach since she was a little bitty thing. And she ended up leaving her gym. And when they really pressed her on, like, why did you leave? It became very apparent that there was a lot of racist statements being made around Trump, around George Floyd, et cetera. And, you know, rest in peace to her father who just passed away. But her Black father was like, we out.
Exactly.
And they got in a car and they drove.
And that's, you know, one of the moments that we have like that on the trail is we, in the show starts with audio from the Gold Over America tour in Houston.
Okay.
And we talked to little girls there and stuff like that. And so one of the things you'll hear in that is a little girl named Anaya. Anaya is 9 and she just moved from, well, I want to say Wisconsin, but it might be Montana. I'm going to be honest. Some of those states, you know,
it's
exactly.
Fine.
And Anaya had just moved to Houston to train at Simone's gym at the WCC. And we heard that story so often, right? Like, it's not now that we're just leaving these gyms in pursuit of new gyms.
A better gym, yes.
Right. But we're actually going to Houston because there's a Black gym there. And we know, and this was Jordan's journey there as well.
Yeah.
And I find it really, you know, I like the parallel because Houston has always been this kind of place that gymnasts had gone, whether they were going out to the ranch.
Right.
And now it's like that shut down. Mm-hmm. Right. But Simone's gym is open and the WCC is constantly affirming the fact that they are a space because they need a space for Black gymnasts. They want a space that's affirming. So when you talk to this girl like Anaya and she's 9 and her mom is right there with her and they were like, we just picked up and left. They had been in Houston for 2 weeks. Right.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Now she was at the WCC and she was like, it's already so much better because it's affirming. And I think that that is a change we're saying. So part of what we're saying in the show is like, nobody wanted these Black girls in the sport. First of all, we'll try to point that they were always there, which is why we start at the rise of the gymnastics. And we show Diane Durham. You need to know Diane because Diane, you know, was really the one taking it to Mary Lou. And she becomes the face of gymnastics because Diane is left off the 84 Olympic team.
Yep.
And so what would have been different, right, if she was on these Wheaties boxes? I mean, they wouldn't have put her on one, but
we can
just have this imagination time. So we do that. But I think the other part of it is, right, to be able to move chronologically and show that people have always been there, but the changes that have occurred over time. And we're not talking about just surface level changes. We're talking about like what happened. So it's the difference between saying, oh, now everybody is having a viral routine, right? Well, that's commodified, right? But the idea that there's a blueprint that was left by UCLA for a program that could be replicated, for choreography that could be replicated, that now it's disseminated and commodified that we can talk about, but it's also a change. And so part of that change over time that we're tracking are these moments where really on the strength of Black girls in the sport, they have influenced and impacted and moved the needle forward, especially as it trickles down. So a lot of times we go to the Olympics with good reason. When somebody like Simone is undeniable, somebody like Serena is undeniable, they create space just because they can't be moved.
It's undeniable.
Exactly. Yeah. But we also are really interested in that kind of trickle down and the work that people are doing in other areas. So we talk to judges. Jasmine Swinnigan's up in Minnesota. She's one of 2 Black gymnastic judges in the state. And one of the things she does is like, go and bust into these meetings where they're learning the rule books. And she takes like apart the slides and she's like, listen, you're docking points off a Black gymnast because
for
you
the
think
way
their toes,
body.
Where their bodies look, or because you think their toes aren't planted because you're trained, literally trained to look at a continuous line. But Black people's feet are 2 colors. And this be fucking up the judges.
Oh my God.
Because they literally are like, oh, it's not pointed because we can't follow this continuous line. So she literally goes in and she's like, this is a pointed toe on a Black foot. So don't take points off because you're seeing a different skin tone. It's not that the foot's not straight. It's just that that's what melanin looks like. You know?
Well, Jordan was saying that she was getting scores taken off for having a booty.
Exactly. Exactly. So we talk about that. Jordan talks about that. Hallie talks about that. Like, the way that they can't see past all that ass, right? They're like, oh, your legs aren't straight. It's like, no, it is.
That's just thickness.
It just is thickness. And so that structural kind of change is also occurring, whether it's judges or we talk about athletes a lot, but coaches have been and will continue to be a huge issue. Athletic trainers have been and will continue to be a huge issue. FIS just announced that they are bringing a gymnastics program there. And that is amazing because we also know stories of people who just had to choose between going to affirming HBCU or continuing the sport. And so also tracking the structural changes, right, about leotards, like Jordan, you know, talks about the meaning behind the clothes that she produces and the leotards and how she wears her hair and how her sister does her makeup.
Yeah.
And these are the things that have changed subtly over time in ways that sometimes we can't perceive, but that lay people, I think, feel when they're like, they see a picture from the WCC and they're like, oh my God, is gymnastics Black? Where they look up and they see the team and they're like, is it Black now? And it's like, you know, actually it's been Black for a while. We just haven't really seen it. And this is what it means to put it front and center.
One thing that's happened with gymnastics becoming more of a marquee sport, right? Like for me, it was always a marquee sport.
Yeah.
But after 96, you know, that's when I feel like it really popped off and became like prime time in a lot more people's zeitgeist than most. Like it used to be a niche thing. And Atlanta Olympics, Magnificent Seven, it became like, oh, gymnastics is a thing, right? And it's funny because my man's like, why do you know all these Russian countries?
Names, right?
And I'm like, well, because in 1992, the Soviet Union broke up. And after that, a lot of my favorite gymnasts were in their respective countries.
Exactly.
You know, Lilia Pokopaeva is from Ukraine. So I think so in that, a lot more people got exposed to a sport that they don't really know shit about.
Yeah.
And so one of my frustrations is when folks will like put up a routine that is, it's all right, you know, but they'll be like, they docked her score because she's Black. And I'm like, now, y'all know I'm down for a race card.
Yeah.
But honey, she didn't hit the handstands.
Yeah.
In
no,
the routine.
I mean, this is real. I mean, we just had this kind of thing go down the other day when there's comparisons being drawn between
the ice skater.
Exactly. And
Shakari.
There you go. And it's one of those things that was like, for sure, there's always disparate treatment. And also, we're talking about different federations. Like the USOPC is actually the ones that, you know, prevent her
from going.
Yeah, like that's them. And then here is the arbitrator of, right. There is literally, in that conversation, three different federations that were all fucking up for different reasons, but it does nothing, right, to condense it. But this is just some of the issue, right, with the kind of quick sharing, quick opinion, whatever, is because nuance, where is it? Who knows, right? I mean, we saw this conversation happen around Simone's routines and Fig because it's absolutely true that there's a way that Fig is penalizing her routines. And it's absolutely true that it's influenced by the fact that she is this dominant Black woman. And it's also true, right, that there
and Fig,
is,
by the way, is the Federation of International Gymnastics.
Go,
they are who determine what scores
values.
Get what values.
Yeah. And it's absolutely whack that you want to penalize her for being able to do what other people can't. But there's also a conversation in there about how people are trying to regulate safety. There is a conversation in there about how other things are scored besides her routines, but we don't have those fuller conversations. And I think that it's because they're not simple. They're actually complicated. And many times there's multiple things in operation. And so, like you said, you have these routines that a lot of times people are like either shouting out or they resonate with for very particular reasons. And I think that like we need to have space to be like, this is why I resonate with this routine. I mean, I just saw, who was it? Jade just was doing her routine that she should have done in the Olympics if she had been on the Olympic team. And it was to a really dope instrumental cut of Satisfied from Hamilton. And she wasn't tumbling because she was just marking through it. And I was like, this music alone has done something for me. I am with it. You know what I mean? And so I think that one of the things that we've seen with the rise of gymnastics moving into this marquee sport is exactly that kind of symbolic politics. It's the same way people were sharing pictures from the WCC and being like, our national team is Black. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not the national team. That is not the Olympic team. That's not how it works exactly.
I appreciate the energy, but the enthusiasm.
Exactly. And I think that there is a way that we can capitalize on that. Like, we can take that interest. We can take people who say, it moves me to see Sakai and her afro killing it right on floor. Exactly. Like, it moves me in this way. But I think that what we forfeit, if we forfeit nuance, is that we are only talking about the visible and the symbolic, and we don't have space then to talk about structural things that could help us. So like, when we're talking about scoring, right, there's a way that like people who are really into the sport can like be nitpicky. But also, if we can't talk about that, then we can't talk about these other ways that like race is really working with scoring, like the foot thing that I was mentioning earlier, right? And so that's kind of where I am and how I think about that kind of mainstreamification of gymnastics.
I mean, the mainstream is who tore up Gabby's at, you know, they tore Gabby up.
That's a lot, you know, so that's one of my favorite conversations. So Gabby was in and out behind the scenes with me in terms of what she wanted to do. So we have a lot of tape from her, but not like a traditional interview in how I did with other people, which is like multi-hour conversation.
I tried to get her on my podcast and she ghosted me, and I was like,
the girl is just like living her best life on TikTok in a farm, you know? And I'm like, you know what?
Like, cool.
That's what you need. Go for it. But I talked to two of my colleagues, both Black women who are also professors of media and sports, Dr. Sam Shepard and Dr. Courtney Cox. And we like really unpack media there. But we talk about Gabby and we unpack like all of these things about hair, all of these things about body, all of these things just about, I mean, the girl, if you ever go to Gabrielle's TikTok, she's going to reference the Dougie once every four TikToks, right? Like, that has stayed with her. but, right, this is like a major media moment. Like, there's like probably every other month on Twitter, somebody will just pop up and be like, remember when Gabby tried to Dougie, right? But you think about like what happened with the rise of visibility and media proliferation at the time is that everybody had an invitation. Like, Twitter was a thing that other gymnasts didn't have to contend with yet. And here you have her being hyper scrutinized, right? You have the familiar conversation around entitlement because she came out of nowhere. That's not true.
There's no version of being a gymnast and coming out of nowhere.
It's like, just not a thing. It's like absolutely not a thing. And actually, just a few months earlier, she had kicked everybody's ass, except that she was designated as an alternate in the meet, so her scores didn't count. Yep. And we have tape in the episode where you'll hear the people who are announcing the meet say, and, well, Gabrielle Douglas, that's another good score. If she counted, she'd be winning.
And this American Cup, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's a major meet.
So it wasn't a surprise. But also the thing about it was she placed first in the all-around coming out of trials. But the conversation centered on if she took Jordan's spot. Right. And it was like, well, maybe you should talk to who was number two.
Well, that was always so frustrating for me, too, because they had created this narrative that Jordan Weber was it.
And was the girl, yeah.
She was beat. Fair and square.
That's what happens in sports. It's sports, beloved. Like, that's what happens. But, like, you're running headfirst into a narrative. Like, and the Olympics are good for that because they have their human interest packages ready to go. You know, so Gabby was really, and Allie, and really Jordan's lack of performance in that space. But also, it's not even that Jordan did bad. They just did better, right? And so she was dealing with all of that. She's dealing with her hair, which is something that...
I was going to say, the hair
I talk to everybody about hair through every generation, because here's the other thing. Every Black girl has had an awkward hair phase. Every Black girl, I feel like, if you're like, I haven't had an awkward hair phase, I'm like, run me the pictures, please, from 12 to 15, you know? But it just so happens that the way gymnastics age is set up, The black girls in gymnastics in elite visible spaces just happen to be hitting that awkward hair freeze right when they're the most visible.
Yes.
You know? And so we talk about that. And like, but I talked about that with like Betty, and she was talking about being down at the ranch and trying to style her hair like her white teammates there in Houston humidity. Oh. It doesn't work. Oh, it's like all the gymnasts from the 80s rocked the same kind of short afro. And they were like, because that was safe. Like we knew we could just do that. Right. So we talk about Gabby's hair and the hyper scrutinization about that. But here's the thing. Gabby's family had made a decision that to advance her training, right, you have to literally give your child over to the sport. She was literally living in fucking Iowa. Right. Do you know how many black hair care options you have in Iowa? Not many. You know what I mean?
And also, like, you just don't care.
You don't care. You're flipping.
Like, people are very much like. Like, I saw someone the other day comment and say that I think Amanda wears her hair, because I'm very whatever about my hair on the Instagrams. And they were like, I think Amanda wears her hair like that because she wants us to feel she's more ethnic. And then I saw someone else say, oh, Amanda's hair is big because it goes along with her agenda. And I'm like, first of all, y'all have a level of attention that, if you could put it to things that actually matter, could actually be very helpful.
Right.
But a lot of people don't understand, like, I'm at the gym. As long as my hair isn't in my face,
I'm good.
So we used to call it the Lion King.
Yeah.
Because I used to have just a bang that
just
didn't,
sticking out.
Just sticking out.
Just the mane.
And like, you know, I would start the day with it, you know, pulled back, but it would just pop up. And to this day, like, I clean up when it's time to clean up, but I think it's just like when I'm talking, it's like when I was in the gym, I'm flipping. Like I'm just focused on what I'm focused on. And these girls though, as we've seen, it's become so much of a celebrity thing now that there's a different vibe. I know we're running out of time, but I would love to hear you talk about just Simone and just the gigantic shift. Because even Gabby was a shift, but then there was like a huge shift.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the handoff to Gabby to Simone, even in our episodes, is really important because the question there is, can there be two black girls at the top of the white sport, right? And we saw in 2016... a resounding answer of no. Because all of the kind of conditional love that Gabrielle had gained after she won, she'd forced people to accept her, a lot of that went away as Simone is rising, as she's ascending. And the thing with Simone, I said it earlier, she's undeniable, right? Like there's just no way that a lot of people could fuck with her. It's why USAG was like, we don't know what to do. Like, what can we do? You know what I mean? And Simone has had her own journey in the sport. Obviously, we saw that this summer a lot as well. But the thing with her that has been so phenomenal to watch, which is why we start at the Gold Over America Tour, which spells GOAT. It took me longer than I will admit to figure that out.
Oh my gosh. I'm just finding that out. I was today years old.
Yeah, the GOAT Tour. So the thing about it is she has obviously, with her family's support, from setting up her gym to not giving a fuck about USAG, right? Launching her own tour. If people aren't familiar, there used to be post-Olympic gymnastics tours that were sponsored by Kellogg. Mm-hmm. There was one sponsored by Sudafed, which seems counterintuitive to flipping.
Right.
But they looked awful. Like, seriously, go to YouTube and watch them because everybody looks miserable. They're tired. They are nursing literally injuries that they have got on the way to the Olympics and
it's
at the Olympics.
It's not production either. It's
just not
like,
production. It's just blah.
It's silly. Like they'll do like hokey, like routine, you know, gag routine.
Exactly.
Like, but when they promoted the GOAT Tour, they were like, it's going to be big girl gymnastics.
It's literally is. And the thing that they did is they took it next level. So Simone chose the people going. That show is so melanated. right? Really, besides Chelsea, the only white gymnasts in the show were the Olympians. So one could say those spots were going to go to whoever made the Olympics and everybody else, right? Including international Black girls, which is a whole other conversation. Exactly. But this is not just happening in the United States. So Melanie's there representing France. We've seen Rebecca, you know, and folks from Brazil. Yep. And Melanie's on the Gold Over America tour. And so you get there, first of all, you know it's going to be different because the choreography is giving. Then also, the themes that they're talking about, one of the big distinctions that we make is that those Kellogg tours, they were just going to be like gymnastics with sparkle and that's it. News was breaking about Larry Nassar and they were like, and the tour is going on and gymnastics is all happy and smiles, right? And the thing that stuck out to me the most about the Gold Over America tour, and it's funny because Nia told me and Jordan told me, they were like, you're going to cry. And I was like, okay.
I
cried through this entire show.
No, I did too. There's,
you know, the moment in which Simone is literally being chased by her anxiety, wearing a hoodie that says your anxiety is lying to you. And she's being chased over the beam and under the bars and up on the stage where she holds hands, you know, with her teammates. And that's what pushes the anxiety away. I mean, hello, what is this?
The whole Caitlin Ohashi, the whole Caitlin word.
That part, the baby pictures about, you know, where you've been and where, like, these are left room for all of it. And like how we started our conversation, there is joy in this sport, you know? And for too long, that has been all we have gotten. And then we have had that big scandal where it's like, and it's abuse. And part of what that show contains is the multitudes. And yeah. Simone herself has been so persistent at that. So when she's going to the Olympics this past summer and saying, part of the reason why I am putting my body through this, adding an extra year to Olympic training is not easy, is because I'm a survivor. And if I'm here, USAG can't stop having the conversation about what they owe us and how they failed to protect us. And she did that to her own detriment of her own mental health, which she also kind of stood in and pushed forward a conversation in. No, not at all.
I know, right?
Zero.
She can't zero end chance. On that. Like, I feel like the type of person she is in her mind, like, I can't
first
see her
and foremost,
have
and
that.
She's talked about, she's like, I want time to be a girlfriend, now a fiance. Go you, girl. But also, like, the Facebook Watch series that she produced, she produced that. You know how that series ends? It ends on her coach saying, oh, LOL, I just got a text for Simone. And she reads the text and she said, why does this have me thinking about
the next
Olympics? Yeah. And she was like, want to come back? And then she's like, and that's how it ends. You know, like I really wouldn't be surprised, mostly because it's a short cycle. If it was another 4-year cycle, then I would say
maybe not.
But it's a shortened cycle. And so I think it will be interesting to see.
Do you know how annoying everyone's going to be? So annoying.
So annoying. Especially don't let her, like, I mean, it's the rhetoric that we've come to assume with like Serena and Venus. Like, it's just going to be annoying in the lead up. And then don't let her have any major life events between now and then. It will be all, that's all we'll hear about. But I think that she is still writing her story in these ways. But that has been the most magnificent thing from the former gymnasts who are now judges, who are now coaching, who are Dominique running. She just announced the opening of another gym on her terms.
Oh, wow.
Tasha Swikert, right? Who was this wonderful gymnast who was called the Dennis Rodman of gymnastics, this bad girl gymnast who the USAG tried to make this like shield and spokesperson of not being abused, to coming forward with her sister Jordan to talk about that. And then being a lawyer and actually being on the legal team that has secured this settlement, right, for these victims. I mean, that is an arc, baby. You know what I mean? And so that has been wonderful to see. Wendy Hilliard with her foundation in New York has trained the next generation of gymnasts from places that people don't go looking for gymnasts. And that is what has been great, is that people have walked away from the sport and some people have pushed it forward. In walking away, some people have pushed it forward by coming back to it in new roles. Some people have said, I am done with it, and my absence is what they need to kind of step into. And I'm excited to see where gymnastics goes. There's a lot of evidence that there's some really great things on the horizon, whether we're looking at Fisk and their program or the work that Brown Girls Gymnastics is doing writ large, the conversation Simone has started about mental health, literally telling the next generation, if you're injured, stop. If you need a break, stop. Like, you can actually speak up. Or the UCLA girls, like you had on your show, saying, this is not it. You know what I mean? The power of refusal. And so I have just been really grateful to bear witness to some of these journeys and to collect these voices and to amplify them and to put them in conversation with each other when so often they've been isolated by the sport and by the decades and all of that. Because I think together, it's just a very powerful testament to the unyielding nature of Black girlhood and Black womanhood. And whether we're gymnasts or professors, actresses, whatever, I think that that is absolutely the core and the heartbeat of the show. So I hope everybody tunes into it.
The script.
So we have a segment called The Script where we let folks know about like supplementary materials they can check out to support our conversation.
For sure.
First and foremost would be listening to the actual podcast to let folks know.
Absolutely. So American Prodigy Season 3, wherever you get your podcast, you can find it. I will tell you there's also bonus episodes on the Apple Podcast, like subscription jam. So there's 8 episodes, like I said, voices of gymnasts you know, you don't know, story. There's so many stories that are like, I've never told this to anybody before. And then we get the tea.
Oh.
It's wonderful. But also those bonus episodes are the kind of fuller conversations with gymnasts that you might hear some of their tape in the episode, and then you'll get our kind of fuller conversation in those bonus episodes. There's transcripts to every episode. We want it to be hyper accessible. So, and we also want to tell everybody that if you need to pop in and out of it because it triggers you in any way, transcripts are a great way to kind of capture the part of the conversation that you're ready to have. So that is wherever you get your podcasts. Check out American Prodigies from the Blue Wire Podcast Network. And I would also shout out the great folks everywhere who's been working on gymnastics. Blind Landing is a great podcast that has been doing this. There has been great coverage on like documentaries like Athlete A, Golden, like you mentioned. There's a lot of gymnastics content should you want to sink your teeth into it. And I hope that we just add to it and center voices that you might not hear in those other spaces.
All right. Well, there it is. I'm looking forward to checking it out and indulging in my adolescent passion of gymnastics. You know, one of my bucket lists is to commentate gymnastics.
Oh, we gotta make it happen.
Like,
even
if it's not, even if it's not officially the Olympics, I'm like, just to do it for somebody.
Nah, I mean, they gave Kevin Hart and Snoop Dogg the post-Olympic show. I mean, that feels like super attainable.
I need to talk to Kevin about that because I'm like, yo, put me in the game, man.
Listen, Peacock has possibilities. I'm trying to, the Peacock possibilities and money, look, it is out here. I'm saying, we're gonna manifest it. We're gonna manifest it.
3:45.
Listen, like, this Olympics had
rough.
Me down bad.
It was rough.
I'm still recovering. And then we had to do the Winter Games. And I was like, I just can't, y'all. Like, it's just not it.
It was commitment. My alarm would go off and I'd be like, do you really feel like getting up? I'm like, yeah, I have to, because right. I have to know. I have to
exactly.
watch it in real time. Because the coverage was also like really all over the place. So it was like, if I trust just their coverage, I'm not
right.
going to get...
Well, the only thing I appreciated is like me. Here's me on my professor's soapbox being like, narrative, da-da-da. But now as it's like, you can see it in real time, people have started noticing it because they'll be like, oh, the primetime coverage is only half the story. Or why are we still looking at Mikayla Shiffrin on a hill? Because people are still skating. Like, Peacock has allowed you to be like, actually, skip that. I'm going to go right to this.
Like, so, I want to see Flavia from Brazil.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. Like, let me just follow her. So gymnastics, especially, you can stay on one event. You can follow people around. I'm manifesting that for you. And I would say, if you need any other reason to listen, Angie Dinkins, remember the name. She was bar champion in the late 80s. She is honestly the funniest truth teller about her time in gymnastics. And
Angie
she
Dinkins.
Is a voice that I want in everybody's life because she is my joy in this project.
The last dose.
Well, thank you so much, Mira. You know, we appreciate the work that you're doing and that you have been doing, particularly in the sports space around Black women. Keep going. And I have a feeling we'll be reconnecting on the gymnastics front in the future.
Let's make it happen. I appreciate the time. Appreciate you having me on.
No doubt.
Scatman's Audio, a podcast, a podcast network.